This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming to the panel on personalized medicine or precision medicine. I'm going to introduce briefly my guests, my speakers that will be participating in the panel tonight. And with that, I will introduce first myself. My name is Dr. William Etwati. I'm the Managing Director for the Drug Development and Product Management Masters that you are here to hopefully listen and potentially find more interest about it. And with that, I will introduce to my right Dr. Razel Kurzrak. She's an MD. She's the Director for Center for Personalized Cancer Therapy and Clinical Trials Office. She is the Senior Deputy Director for Clinical Science at the Moore Cancer Center and Chief of Division of Hematology Oncology at the Department of Medicine at UCSD. My other guest tonight is Dr. Zelena Goldberg, who is also an MD, and she's the Senior Director and Global Clinical Lead at Pfizer Oncology La Jolla. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to them and ask them to tell us a little bit more about themselves, and then I will start with the questioning. Dr. Kurzrak, please.
So thank you for that nice introduction. Just a little bit of background. I'm originally from Canada. I spent many years of my professional life at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, and there I was charged with founding and building a clinical trials department for early clinical trials, which really became the largest of its type in the world. I moved to San Diego about 5 years ago and have a variety of titles, but what I'm really passionate about is the Center for Personalized Cancer Therapy and making precision medicine real for patients with cancer.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Zelena Goldberg. I'm a radiation oncologist and radiobiologist by background and training. I'm also Canadian, actually. I didn't realize you were, too. Came down, actually, to do some more education at Stanford and then joined UC Davis faculty originally and then came over to biotech and ultimately to Pfizer. I've been at Pfizer now almost 8 years and worked in small molecule development as well as now biologics with our immuno-oncology program. I would say I'm passionate about moving cancer to the point where we can genuinely give people back their lives and really cure them and let them grow old.
Excellent. Thank you. With that, I will start with the first question. Can you please define for us what is precision or personalized medicine, and is it the same? So I will ask you each, you know, if you don't mind.
I think that's a really good question. And when I give lectures, I get that question a lot. What is the difference between personalized medicine and precision medicine, and what is the right word for it? So they're really referring to the same thing. And as it turns out, because cancers are both complicated and each person's cancer is unique, in order to implement precision medicine, that is to treat their tumors precisely, it turns out that you need to personalize. You need to individualize therapy. So both the word precision medicine and personalized medicine really apply. And actually, there was a high school student at one of my lectures who said, you need a new word, and here it is, precisionalized medicine. So I sometimes use that now.
I'd say it's kind of a nice way to think about it is to get the right medicine to the right patient at the right time. And that takes a lot of science. It takes the personalized information about the tumor, about the staging, about the cancer, about the patient. And then we need to know enough about our own medicines to know which one is the best tool we have in our tool chest at that time for that patient.
So that's very interesting. That leads me to my next question, which is, how do you use biomarkers, and maybe you can define what biomarkers are, to actually help you define the type of therapy you would use for your patients? for that precision medicine.
So a biomarker is simply a type of marker that is found in the cancer that can help us get the right drug to the right patient at the right time. And so many of our biomarkers are now genomic DNA biomarkers, mutations, and other alterations. But it's really not just about genomics. Transcriptomics is coming on the scene. And there are several protein biomarkers that we use routinely, such as, for example, in breast cancer, understanding the hormone or estrogen status of the cancer. So it's really any biologic marker that will correlate with a drug response.
I think that's a really good definition. It's anything that allows us to distinguish patients who are likely to receive benefit from those that are not. So we don't expose patients to treatments that will only give them side effects and will not help control their cancers. And it is, as Rizal said, there are a lot of different proteins now or genomics that we can test. And they're finding accurate biomarkers is incredibly difficult, and validating them, incredibly difficult, a lot of work. And we really need them to truly separate those that will respond and those that won't. So it's a short phrase for a very large area of interest in medicine.
So I have actually a follow-on question on the biomarker side, which is, having been in industry for many, many years, and since you are our industry representative, how do you use biomarkers when you design clinical trials, actually? And, you know, I know Dr. Kurzrak also conducts clinical trials as well, so the question goes for you as well. But I'm wondering, because that's something that's quite important, and what are the advantages of using biomarkers for clinical development?
Sure. So biomarkers, we always try to use validated biomarkers for selection strategies gained so that the patients that come onto a given clinical study are the most likely to get benefit. The challenge, especially early in drug development, is knowing ahead of time which biomarkers will in fact help that selection. And whether we are testing the drug in an appropriate group. The separation, for example, we've just been at a long meeting, and we're certainly talking a lot about biomarker strategies. A lot of them get developed after we have a big study and we have a large enough data set. And because some of them are transferable across tumor types, but a lot of them, what are the cut points, are very tumor specific. So something that distinguishes those who will respond, more likely to respond versus less likely to respond in lung cancer, that same cut point does not necessarily translate to other tumor types. So it's very difficult, very important to do. And it's very important within that, when we write our studies, is to we do our very best to ask patients and ask investigators to collect tissue, and particularly tissue up front. And also we don't have a lot of success, but we ask for tissue at recurrence. Because that's going to really help drive our next biomarker development and selection process.
Excellent. Well, moving on to the next question, I was wondering if you could describe what are the new modalities and the new medications that you would consider for precision medicine. I'm thinking particularly about immuno-oncology or CAR-T therapies, which we have heard a great deal recently.
Yeah, so I think a lot of new drugs are being developed with biomarkers. The ones that come to mind as a as a first step are really some of the drugs with genomic biomarkers. So let's say in lung cancer, where we look for specific genomic abnormalities, and it might be, for instance, an EGFR mutation or an ALK alteration. And then we choose those patients in order to give them an EGFR inhibitor or an ALK inhibitor. But it turns out that biomarkers are very important in immuno-oncology as well. And often people think about the genomic field and the immuno-oncology field as separate silos. But I like to think of them as a couple, and they're married to each other. So our current immuno-oncology drugs work by reactivating the immune system. The immune system has been inactivated by the tumor for the tumor to survive. Some of our drugs, like checkpoint inhibitors, reactivate that immune system. But once reactivated, the immune system still has to recognize the tumor. And the way it often recognizes the tumor as a result of the mutations in the tumor. So those mutations result in what we call neoantigens that are presented, proteins that are presented by the tumor on the surface. And the immune system, once reactivated, will react to those proteins. So the more mutations that you have, the more abnormal proteins or neoantigens that you're presenting, the more likely the immune system is going to recognize that tumor as not belonging and wanting to get rid of it. So some of our best biomarkers for immunotherapy are, in fact, biomarkers that reflect a very high mutational burden.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And this, again, we've seen some really interesting data on that in lung cancer, where they've been able to define a cut point that seems to separate those those patients who are more likely to have tumors that respond versus non-responders. That cut point does not appear to be generalizable outside of lung cancer. So the principle still seems very much to work, but the cut point doesn't. And this is where some of the challenges lie in developing biomarkers that are robust, is each step has to be validated for each tumor type. In correlating with that, one of the other emerging potential biomarkers in immuno-oncology is the breadth of variation in people's immune repertoire, immune cell recognition ability, if you will. The broader that seems to be in a given patient, the more likely they are going to respond to immunotherapy. But this is very early data. We don't know how broadly this will play out. And again, we don't yet know whether that's going to be a generalizable phenomenon. So it's very interesting data times, because it's exploding new data on what we understand about this.
Thank you. Could you explain what CAR T therapy is, and is it truly what you would call the true personalized medicine?
I don't know that I can truly do CAR T therapy justice. It is the ultimate, I think, in individualized therapy. You have to harvest the tumor, and you create these specialized cells that will recognize it. You grow them up. You reinfuse them into the patient. So it is a truly unique therapy for each unique patient with unique tumor. Consequently, it is incredibly time and cost intensive. And therefore, I think there's a lot of, they've had some phenomenal responses, just, you know, front page news, sail through the FDA, truly miraculous. I don't use that term lightly. At the same time, I think those of us who kind of slog in the field recognize those are wonderful, but never going to be generalizable because of the work and cost associated.
Yeah, so I think CAR T is a transformative concept, and It really is personalized therapy because you're altering the patient's immune system, reinfusing the cells, and then they recognize the tumor. And what everybody has gotten really excited about is that you can get complete remissions on patients that have been through multiple therapies, and the complete remission rates are incredibly high. Some of these patients are very, very refractory, and then you give them the CAR T, and I'm always hesitant to use the word cured, but they sure look like they're cured, which is incredible. On the other hand, it is very expensive and a sort of a very time-consuming type of thing to make these cells. So I think one of the questions might be, are we going to get better at this, mass-producing it? Or is this an interim technology, and can we produce, let's say, vaccines, personalized vaccines that, in a way, do the same thing, induce the immune system to recognize your tumor, but without the cell infusions, which are time-consuming and have a lot of side effects. So I think we'll see. This is a very interesting time where technology is moving incredibly fast, and I've learned to never say never.
Right. Well, and you bring up a good point, because even with the cost and the time, you also have a large percentage of patients where you can't get the CAR T cells made. An alternative way that there's a lot of research going on now, certainly within Pfizer, but very broadly, is exactly kind of how you say, which is, how do we vaccinate patients against their own tumors? How do we get that immune system to utilize what has evolved for, you know, millions and millions of years to see the tumor as foreign? How do we know how to take the brakes off to some degree, which is, of course, our current checkpoint inhibitors, but can we infuse something in a simple viral capsid, for example, in, like the common cold? We all have antibodies to that, but get it to take that up, and then because it will now react to a small drug put inside of that, allows the tumor to now, or the immune system rather, to now recognize the tumor again wherever it is in the body. That's very much what is kind of we would like to see as the next step in the evolution of this sort of treatment, because it doesn't have to be personalized in the truest sense of each person has to have a full therapy made just for him or her.
I see. Thank you. One of the other questions I have is in regard to genetic testing. How do you think that genetic testing should be done systematically, or should it be done only on an ad hoc basis? What's your opinion from that standpoint?
So I am a firm believer that all tumors should have full genetic testing. And I think if we had no restrictions on the logistics or the cost, we would do it every time somebody progresses after a therapy, because that's the best tool that we have to try and understand how tumors grow resistant to our therapies and allow us to focus our research efforts on what those mechanisms of resistance are and how can we overcome them to allow us to do rational drug design. Ideally, again, in the perfect world, every tumor at early stage. Right now, the tumor NGS, they're called, testing really only happens in the advanced or metastatic stage. And that's been incredibly valuable in understanding tumors and tumor biology, and helping to select biomarkers and validate them or begin the data collection to allow validation. But we still don't have a way of judging whether those tumors started out different up front. So we could have done different therapies at the get-go and not had to have patients, you know, do something and then unfortunately have their tumor come back and be widely metastatic at that point. So I think people should have them done. They should go into databases that are freely shared, and we should be doing as broad a search as possible with the sharing of data to gain as much information and then hand it to the data scientists to use their deep learning tools and tell us where to direct our, frankly, limited resources on drug development and then with patients.
Yeah, so I absolutely agree. I think there should be universal genomic testing of tumors. And actually, that's a pretty controversial position. I actually think it's straightforward. What I learned from the day I finished, started medical school throughout my practice is that the first thing when a patient walks in is, I want a diagnosis. That, because I can't treat a patient without a diagnosis. So how do we get a diagnosis in cancer? We get a diagnosis by looking under the light microscope, which was invented in 1490. So it has had a really long and good run. And what does the light microscope do? It allows us to look at the surface of the cell and say where that cell came from. It came from the breast. It came from the lung. And that's how we get a diagnosis. But it tells us nothing about what is abnormal in that cell. So to me, genomics or next generation sequencing is simply a diagnostic tool. And it tells us what's inside that cell and precisely what's wrong with it. And so I think genomics is the diagnosis. And I actually anticipate that at some point in the next few years, it may even be malpractice not to do genomics, just like it today would be malpractice for me to treat a patient without a light microscope pathologic diagnosis. So I agree with you.
Thank you. So moving a bit further up from the cell to the patient, what do you see are the key benefits of personalized or precision medicine from a patient perspective?
Okay, I'll take that. So I think patients really understand this concept that each tumor is different and that we want to understand with genomics or other biomarkers what's wrong with their tumor because no patient really cares about what's wrong with another 100 people's tumors. They really want to know, what is wrong with my tumor, and can you craft a therapy that is the right therapy for my tumor, not for a population of 100 or 1,000 people that are each have different tumors. So I think the main benefit for the patient is precision medicine opens the door to giving the right drug to the right patient at the right time. It is giving us the tools to do that.
Thank you.
I agree. If you think about it, if we have therapies now that have a 20% chance of working in an individual patient, which is not a bad percentage for a lot of, certainly our chemotherapies are often less than that, that means 80% or 80 out of 100 people who have to take this medication with all of its attendant side effects get no benefit. They only get the side effects. They get no tumor shrinkage or prolongation of time without tumor or survival. Precision medicine helps the right patients only get the right drug, and all those other people can go on and get something different that can help them.
Thank you. I'd like to expand a little bit, actually, on that. And, you know, today drugs are being primarily developed for specific indications, which goes a bit contrary to what was described during, you know, our discussion. How do you go about now in terms of once you have done genomic testing in terms of testing which drug would be better effective for that specific cancer and that specific tumor. Can you today in the clinic, or are the pharma industry really working towards really this type of treatment perspective?
We definitely are. There is no tool yet that allows us outside of a patient to test that specific tumor with drugs that are available and give information that says, yes, this tumor actually responds. I've been involved in some work looking at some companies that are involved in this area. There are some very exciting things, nothing obviously I can disclose publicly, but that's almost a holy grail, if you will, in the search. That's kind of the ultimate personalized medicine, is we take somebody's genomics and we have the tumor and we have the drug and we do it in a petri dish before we do it in a patient. That just makes everything work better if that were feasible today.
Yeah, so I think what is happening is that genomics is a disruptive technology. Actually, that's not bad, because cancer needed to be disrupted. But what genomics has unveiled is that what I mentioned before, each patient tumor is complicated and unique. We actually are comparing metastatic cancers to malignant snowflakes, complicated and unique. So why is that disruptive? The last five decades, everything that we've done in clinical research, in clinical trials, we've set up a whole regulatory system, and in clinical practice involves finding commonalities between patients and treating them in the same way. And here comes genomics and tells us that everybody's different. And that everybody has each patient, each tumor has their own set of unique alterations. So if you think about it, the paradigm of finding commonalities doesn't work anymore. The new paradigm is treat each patient as an individual, and in fact, give them an N of one customized combination of therapy, of treatments, of drugs. And we have a protocol that we're called iPredict, and we're doing that at UCSD. We've treated several hundred patients in this way, and we think the results are really interesting. But then if you ask me, how are drugs going to be developed under that paradigm?
Yeah, that's not really a pharma paradigm, I can tell you.
Right. So that's becomes now a problem, because the way we develop drugs no longer fits with what the science has told us about cancer. So I always believe that the science is going to win in the end, and we're going to have to figure our way around it. So we've been able to manage this now with a new type of protocol where we individualize therapy. But when I'm asked by industry colleagues, so how are we going to develop a drug under this paradigm, I don't have the answer to that.
Well, let me give you a somewhat different way to look at it. What genomics has allowed us to do, because we can look beneath the surface of the cell and look at the actual mutation, we now have the ability to group tumors by mutation and treat those as the core group and develop drugs there. And in fact, we have drugs that have now been approved in the United States for use based on their genomic status rather than their histology or what the cells look like under the microscope. So that's one path through this. It's not one by one by one, but it's mutation by mutation. Those are things that we're looking at a lot more, because it does allow us to individualize and make best use of the data as it comes, but at the same time have a big enough group of patients exposed that we can ensure that we're not seeing completely unique responses, but in fact this drug will work in all the tumors that have this sort of change in them. And we have a big enough group of patients who we can say, yes, we understand what the safety of the drug is. Because remember, half of the equation that we are asked to prove in having new drugs is that they are safe. And we can't do that on an N of one. So it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. One of the other question I have is in regards to technology. And, you know, we talked about genomic profiling. There are a number of companies, some of them in San Diego, who are actually working diligently in trying to put a sequencer on every physician's desk. Do you think that the future, let's say maybe 5 years, 10 years, I don't know what it looks like, would be that each oncologist could do full genomic, the patient walks in the clinic, gets, you know, hopefully, I mean, potentially can have access to the, I mean, you have to have access to the tumor, obviously.
Maybe you don't.
Okay.
Maybe you don't. Actually, the last conversation I had today before coming here was about there are four companies right now in a race to look at cell-free DNA from patients' blood.
Okay.
And two of them have what are considered a centralized model. So you send that blood in, and they have a lab that they do the test in and give you the result. And the other two are going the opposite direction and say, we're going to make a kit that we ship out to individual. At this point, we're thinking about it as hospitals, not individual physicians, but same idea. It says, okay, you get the blood, here's a fixed test, and you do it there. But the idea we need to have patients biopsy is really difficult. And I, you know, you can speak to the challenges of that more so, but we know it's really hard, and we know we have to move beyond the invasive biopsy structure.
Yeah, so I think it's complicated. So we've done a lot of liquid biopsies, which are blood, several thousand, and of course a lot of tissue sequencing as well. And where we are right now is that they're both valuable, and they don't give you the same answer. They give answers. It's like a Venn diagram. Part of the diagram overlaps, but part doesn't. Now, some people have challenged the validity, usually of the liquid biopsy, because it came second, because the answers aren't identical. But actually, there's very good biologic reasons that these give us somewhat overlapping, but also different answers. And so if you do a blood biopsy, which is taking a vial of blood and looking at the genomics, the shed DNA in that blood might be from multiple metastases, from the lung, from the bone, from the liver. In contrast, when you're looking at a tissue biopsy, all you know is what's in that little piece of tissue. And we know that metastatic disease is heterogeneous, so you don't know what's in other parts of the body, but you can get that out of the blood. On the other hand, the blood's not perfect either. It's smaller amounts of DNA that's in the blood. Not all alterations may be shed into the blood, and we don't know if the alterations that we're not seeing in the blood, they may be important. And so far, what we can do on the tissue are usually larger panels than in a practical sense than we can do in the blood, although that might change. So I actually have no doubt that the blood will remain important. It's easy to sample. Right now, the tissue is still important. The question will be, will it remain important? And I think we have to see. I'm not sure.
I completely agree. And just this tiny example gives you a flavor for how hard it is to develop biomarkers. because this is exactly some of the issues. When you take tissue, you have intrinsic sampling error. You only know what's in that little piece that you took out of the patient and looked at under the microscope. 2 millimeters over, 1 millimeter over, could be a very different scene, but does the blood capture that? How do we know what isn't shed? We know it is shed. We have every time from the, you have any kind of processing, when both samples have to undergo processing, you could be altering things. You could be losing things. How do we put in that quality? The issue of biomarkers is incredibly complex, and every step of it gets a sort of vigorous debate, and we need those data. It will be years until we have enough data for us to be able to kind of weigh in more so on blood versus tissue.
Very interesting. I'd like to switch to a different topic, still on the precision medicine, but really, rather than being on the patient, I'd like to be on the educational side. And from your perspective, what is it going to take on an educational side of the healthcare professional, both, I would say, at the clinical level, but also in industry? So what needs to happen to educate physicians, nurses, pharmacists, from your perspective? Because I think it's really important.
Yes, I think I'm going to tackle the clinical perspective, and I think that's a really important question. What we're seeing in the clinic is the technology has evolved very quickly, and physicians are not prepared for it. Physicians that have been in practice, they're puzzled by genomics. It's Greek to them. And worse is that the physicians that are coming fresh out of fellowship and fresh out of medical school are not being taught precision medicine. We see people straight out of fellowship coming from that we recruit from really good universities, and we have to babysit them for the first year in the clinic, in the precision medicine clinic, because they can't read a genomics report, even one that is really clear from a company that knows how to write them. So we need some transformative changes in the whole educational area, especially in medicine, in cancer medicine. And precision medicine isn't going to be just cancer medicine. It's going to be all of medicine. So we might as well start thinking about how we're going to approach this for all of medicine.
Thank you.
You know, completely agree with the incredible need for education and continuous education, of course. You know, in the industry, we're probably a little bit better positioned because we have full-time professionals who it's their job to keep up with this and create it, and they educate the rest of our drug development teams on an ongoing basis. Where it gets very difficult for us, for example, I'm involved in a protocol being developed right now where we want to get biopsies and use that information for patients. And we're working with patient advocacy groups to make sure that when they get the reports back and they sit with their doctors, they can interpret the results. Because, you know, if we're going to ask patients to undergo biopsies, they need to get something of value back to them. And that value is the report, but it's what you can do with the report and making sure you understand the report. And that's a new challenge for us to not just help patients in terms of potential new therapies, but also be more directly involved in their education and helping them understand what's going on with their tumor and therefore what options that makes available to them.
Excellent. Well, I see the time is up, so I want to thank again Dr. Kurzrak and Dr. Goldberg for being here today.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.